Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's Bud Pod 77.
77, the luckiest number.
Is it?
Well, I mean, you know, with two dice,
yeah.
The seven's a lucky number, right, to get.
Yeah.
It's also the most likely number to get because it consists of the largest number of combinations between two dice.
Yes, 3 and 4 and 2 and 5 and 1 and 6 and so on.
Correct. That's it, actually, I think. Isn't that something?
7. Is it in China it's 8, isn't it? That's lucky.
8, 3 but yeah, 8's the ideal one.
Is there a sort of a myth behind that or something?
8, 8, 8. I guess it'll have something to do with what 8 sounds like in Chinese.
Bah! Oh, right.
Because that's what it is. It's all about what's a word that sounds the same? Homonym?
Does it sound like the word for like money and fortune and luck? And
it must be. Why is 8 lucky in China? Ba sounds similar to fa, which means fortune. Okay. Yeah. So fa
there
is...
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's... It would... I guess it would be sort of an interesting coincidence if both words hadn't been invented by the same culture. I mean, that's... It's not really a coincidence, is it? You decided to call it that.
Yeah, you came up with this. Like... What would the equivalent be in English? Like, oh, bunnies are the most lucky pet because it rhymes with money.
Yeah,
bunny
exactly.
Bunny rhymes with money.
Yeah. I mean, Chinese superstition is basically Cockney rhyming slang taken to its illogical extreme.
They just love things that sound like other things. That's what happens if you have such an incredibly tonal language.
Yes, exactly. There are lots of homonyms. Homonyms. That's a funny word to say. It sounds like you're like in an old-timey comedy. Homonym.
Yeah, when you get really excited when words sound the same. So you go homonym. As some of the Bud Pods on my Instagram noticed, we played cricket for the first time in our lives on Sunday.
Yes, on Sunday, a bunch of comedians went out to play cricket in Cookham Dean in Berkshire. It was the first time I'd ever played. A big shout out to Cookham Dean Cricket Club for, I'll use the word humouring, for humouring us. by playing their second, third team against us. A bunch of comedians. There were a couple of good players in our teams, a couple of ringers, as they're called, who actually do play cricket. And while they were playing, we thought we had a chance. We're like, shit, comedians are pretty good at cricket. And then they were, you know, bowled out. And then the rest of us had to play. And then we realized, oh, we were doing well because we weren't playing.
I believe it's known as the batting order collapsed, I think is what they'd say. In the game of cricket, I think I don't really know, and we just got unlucky because at least one of us went out for a duck, as they say.
Yes, I'm glad I didn't go out for a duck at least. So a duck is when you go into bat and you don't make any runs and you're bowled out, and then a golden duck is if you're bowled out instantly.
I think one of us went out for a golden duck.
Between you and I? No.
No.
It was someone else. Yeah. Lloyd Griffiths did. I don't know if you'll appreciate us saying that on here. But I mean, considering my history of PE and sports in general, I'm chalking that up as a win that I didn't go out instantly.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, the last time I tried to play a cricket like in a proper way, like with the actual rules and kit and so on, I must have been like 11, 12 at most.
Really? Yeah. I'd never put any of the kit on, so I practiced with a friend of the pod and friend of ours, Tom Rosenthal, the comedian and actor, who organized the game. We did some practice stuff, and I was like, hey, this is all right. I can bat pretty good. I can move around pretty easily. And then the game came, and then you have to suit up. Because cricket is a sort of gentle, slow, erudite game in which you need to dress up as fucking Iron Man or you'll get your head knocked out. Like, your brain will get caved in by the hardest ball in sport. And so I'd never put the pads on before. And, you know, it's actually very difficult, one, to run in pads, and two, to see the ball coming through the grill of a helmet.
Yes. Yeah, I really... That was one of the things I hated when I was 11 or 12 and tried to do it, was that I got really claustrophobic in the helmet and I couldn't see, the, you know, where other people were around me, no peripheral vision. And
yeah.
Really, oh, yeah. And so yeah, like you say, you've got to dress up like... Like a guy in a fucking riot, so that another guy can windmill his arm to get a rock to fly at you as fast as possible.
That's right. Keep an eye on this very fast rock whilst dressed like you're defusing an IED in the Hurt Locker.
We've painted the rock red. So that's the one concession we'll make to you. It's not gray anymore. This boulder is now red.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing in the world.
It's very hard, but I had a great time. I really liked fielding. We just stand outside, away from the action, and if the ball comes to you, then you gotta really make a show of trying to get it. Otherwise, everyone gets mad at you.
You got to do a big jump. I find fielding very tense because I get very distracted easily, and then suddenly... You do nothing for ages, and then when you do have to do something, if you fuck it up, it makes you look like even more of a knob because it was the one time you had to do something.
Yeah, the one thing you had to do. That's right. That's right. I was okay at it. I was a decent fielder. I let one go because I was early on in the game and I hadn't yet grasped the rules of cricket, and I didn't know we weren't supposed to let it grow sometimes.
It's also like
we lost a bunch of points and unnecessarily there.
Oh yeah. I mean, we all gave lots of points away. We're a bunch of fucking clowns. It's so lingo heavy. Like, the guys on the team who'd played cricket before, like Tom Rosenthal, like Luke Kempner, the impressionist and comedian, they would be like, just do a square leg on, and once it's a silly wiggler, then bowl a duck at him. He goes, look, you have to stop this. You must know that I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. For me, the most, like, just the idea of one side of the field being leg side. And I was like, I'm pretty sure people have legs on both sides. There are legs everywhere. Wow. Which leg? And then offside. Okay, oh, so we're not supposed to go there? No, you can absolutely go there. But then wouldn't I be offside?
And the boundary is also the line, but no one's calling it the edge, which clearly is the edge.
Yes. But I got quite into it. I think maybe I'll become a cricket guy.
I really enjoyed it. I started in my position as a guy standing in the middle of a field, hoping that they won't hit the ball at him. Well, actually, I was watching it. It was the first time I was watching it, and I started to appreciate the tactics or how it might all fit together.
Yeah,
or why
yeah.
Why anyone did certain things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then suddenly started to see the mechanisms of the game slotting into place. And once you start to understand, it's actually pretty simple structurally. You just two teams get turns, sort of trying to hit some wood with a ball. So maybe I'll start becoming a cricket guy at the age of 30.
That's a good age to do it, I think. Yeah.
I'm holding a practice cricket ball now without even thinking about it. I bought one to practice throwing and holding. And it's just quite satisfying to hold. It's like a stress ball.
It is nice to hold. I think, and like you say, that watching it, it's simpler than you thought, but also watching it, it made me realize that it is quite strategic, and like, I didn't realize how defensive the game was. In my head, it was just weird baseball, and you just thwack the fucking thing in the sky and run.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's really sort of defensive and fiddly and tense, and like one slip up and you've completely fucked up everything. And
that's it, yeah. Yeah,
I hadn't quite appreciated it till I was in it. And the nice thing about comedians is that they will explain things to you, whereas at school it was always like, well, the batsman can't fire it towards wiggle end or it'll get a silly on. And you go, you have to help me.
Yeah, I had to ask the other team what the rules were during the game. I was like, why did everyone cheer just then? And they're like, oh, you just scored 4 points. Oh. Yeah.
I was bowling, I said to the umpire was like, are you an overarm rumbler? And I was like, I don't know. I literally said, I don't know. I throw with my right hand. And he was like, okay.
Oh, yeah. So your right hand overarm, because you're bowling with your right hand and you were bowling from the right-hand side of the wicket.
Left-hand side.
Oh, you were left-hand side. I thought overarm was on the right-hand side.
I don't know. Right. I don't even really remember what he asked me if I was. I said, I'm going to stand here and throw with this hand. That's what I'm going to do. You call it whatever fucking ridiculous Victorian slang you want.
Well, I'm amazed at its sort of proliferation around the world, obviously through the British Empire, but it's like it's not really a casual game to just set up. There's so much like kit and specific measurements. Like football, you can understand how that is everywhere. You know, you just need a ball and, you know, a space designated to be the goal that can be two pieces of cloth. You can kind of understand how that is everywhere. But like cricket, you need like these sticks that are just the right size, and they have to be balanced ever so carefully on each other, and they have to be like an exact number of yards from one another, and you need all this padding.
Oh no, but that's just what you need to play it safely. Like if you see, you must have seen footage of those fucking kids in India and slums just thwacking rocks with sticks.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it's rocks and sticks, isn't it?
Yeah, I like you see footage of like it's always in like some fucking patronizing HSBC advert where it's like a bunch of slum kids in India or Pakistan, and they've set up some stumps, and they've got like an old taped together cricket bat in what appears to be the dustiest field on earth.
Right. Yeah.
And they're all sort of running around. Yeah.
And the voiceover is something like, dreaming is saying yes when the opportunity is thrown at you, and then clack, yeah, and this little kid's like, and he starts running.
Exactly.
HSBC, let us dream with you. Trust us with your rock.
the little kid shields his eyes from the sun as he watches his older brother do really well at like slum cricket. And, yeah, the voice is like, ambition means seeing chances where others see only risk.
Yeah.
Eventually, banking adverts will just be auto-generated by a bot. It's a footage of a horse and someone throwing a coin down a well and winking. Just whatever.
I've said this to you before. Like, banking adverts should just be, just show me your rates. Just show me a table. Like, the advert is just like, the screen goes blank and then a table comes up with your rates.
Yeah.
And then your competitor's rates. And then, let me see. And then, okay, yeah, that's all the information I need. I don't need a fucking horse galloping into the sea. What does that have to do with ISAs?
And this big voiceover where they're like, there's nothing we'd like more than to help you and your family. And yes, there is. Making money.
I hate all that. Especially during the coronavirus, it's got worse. Like, we're here to help you. It's like, what? When did we become friends?
Yeah. And you want to ring them up and go, can I just have some money then? Can I just have it? And they go, oh, no.
I thought you wanted to help me. You have so much money. It's literally all you do. You hold on to money.
All you do is hold on to money and give it out to people who then slowly pay it back. And that's what I want to do. And they're like, no.
But we're here to help you.
Do you want a horse? It should be like, yeah, a blank screen, and then what fades in is a big number on the screen in white on black, and it says 0.1% interest, and it says, Lloyd's, our interest rates are the same as everyone else's. Terrible. Saving money is pointless. Buy a gun. Something like that.
So PNI cricket boys. I'm sorry, pod buds. This is going to be a cricket podcast now.
Yes, we're coming for Andy Zaltzman's crown.
That's right. That's right. We have quite a bit of catching up to do. He's been watching cricket a couple more seasons more than we have, but I reckon we'll get there.
Yeah, it's going to be the puns that will be the hardest.
Yeah, I mean, we do puns, but if there's anything not shit based, we're sort of at a loss as to what sounds like.
Yes, if we could get some sort of confluence of stories of people who've pooed themselves while fielding or something.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
There must be something like that.
I'm sure it's happened. You're out there for a long time.
Yeah, you are kind of out there for fucking hours, aren't you? I got quite badly sunburned.
Did you? I feel bad because at the time you're like, I'm going to get sunburned. And I said, it's fine. Because the sun's just coming out in bursts in between the grey English clouds. But I guess
well, this is it. I mean, I've developed the incredible ability to feel exactly when my body is being sunburned in real time.
That's pretty good. That's like one of the abilities of, you know, a lesser member of the Justice League. There are superheroes of lower down the pecking order that are about as powerful as that.
Yeah, I mean, I get to live in the mansion with Professor X, but I'm like a chef and I do the accounts.
Yeah.
I don't have lasers, but you know, if I'm out in the sun, I can feel a sort of weird prickling sensation. And I go, oh, I'm burning, and
he knows exactly when to go back inside. Yeah. And your X-Men name is Factor Zero, because you don't need any.
Just Factor.
A Factor's good. Factor, yeah.
Rise of Factor. And I've got like the body suits and everything, and I just go out and into the sun, and I stand there for about 10 minutes, and go, the sun's too strong. Stay indoors, kids. Till about maybe 3:30 p.m. Thanks, Factor. I'm definitely one of those expendable mutants where, like, when the mutants are being killed by Megatron or whatever the fuck his
war.
Name is.
Yeah.
I get like my head pulled off and my spine ripped out in a really horrible animation.
Yeah, and when you're watching the movie, you're like, wait, who's that? Oh, they're dead instantly. I guess they didn't matter. There must have been an intern.
There's a lot of really cheap mutants where it's like they've got sort of half blue hair, half green hair, and like one big finger, and they just get torn to shreds.
One big finger. Swiper. Yeah. Touch type.
We tracked him down through Tinder. Professor X has liked you.
What? Professor XXS. XXX, as he is on the on the dating apps.
And you swipe yes on him. It's like, thank you for matching with me. I think I know what you need. A home. And you go, oh, right. I thought it was a terrible sexual proposition. But no, this this psychic old man just wants me to come live with him and wear latex.
Have you seen Logan? I think canonically the last of the X-Men films.
No, I never did. I kept sort of meaning to because I wanted to see old Wolverine fucking around, but I never did.
It's very good, but completely depressing, like completely depressing. And it people talk about the later Avengers movies being like, oh, it's so sad, but there's still like hope at the end of those. At the end of like Logan's just about the end. It's just over. It's just fucking over. God.
So it's just like a depressing film.
Yeah, I mean, the song that went with the trailer was Johnny Cash's rendition of Hurt, if that gives you any idea of how well it's going to go for old Logan.
They're going to send him to Folsom Prison.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it. Shall we, you and I, Philip, do some emails?
Okay.
Ring letters, emails, phone numbers, your sister, correspondence.
Time for some correspondence.
Correspondence. So nice to hear from y'all, as always.
Always good to hear from you guys. We're working our way to you. We'll get to you. We're digging through the rubble. We'll find you down there. A quick note from John, who was my technician at Leicester Comedy Festival.
Oh, nice. Leicester Com John.
Leicester Com John.
I'm thinking of Nottingham. Okay, never forget it. Yeah, John, hey.
He says, just a quick email with a picture of the old Queenie that a friend of mine shared that I hope you'll appreciate. Hope you're staying safe in these crazy times. Keep up the good work. Thank you, John. And it's just a picture of the Queen. You know that famous picture of the Queen's enormous face at Piccadilly Circus during her big address?
Her enormous face at Piccadilly Circus?
You know there's those big screens on Piccadilly Circus?
Yeah.
Well, when the Queen said, we will fight the virus, she was being broadcast big on Piccadilly Circus.
Was she? Okay.
Have you not seen this? This was like the most apocalyptic visual.
I've just looked at it. Yes. Very good. Very scary.
It's above the boots. So it's that picture of her. But
very Britain will prevail vibes.
Yeah. Very much so. No one ever thought we'd see the Queen in an abandoned Piccadilly Circus saying, together we will fight the virus. Terrifying. They've changed it. They've changed the caption. And it's the Queen, and the caption just says, all poo-poo times are pee-pee times, but not all pee-pee times are poo-poo times.
Who has done this?
I think it's true.
Is this led by donkeys or something?
No. It's a Photoshop. They haven't actually done it in real life.
Right.
It's just a silly Photoshop. But what do you think, Phil? Are all poo-poo times pee-pee times?
I think we've had this discussion before. I often go in for a wee and then end up pooing. So, but not all the time. So it's certainly not the case that all pee-pee times are pooper times. Are all pooper times pee-pee times? I think pretty much.
Yeah.
Near as damn it.
I would say near as damn it. I mean, unless you've maybe... Is it cheating if you go for a pee and then think, oh, no, it's a poo time, and then poo time?
Why is that cheating? Who are you cheating?
Like, is it cheating to say, oh no, that was a poo time, that wasn't a pee time, but it was because you just did a pee?
Well, I mean, this is where honesty has to come into it, doesn't it? We just have to be honest with ourselves here.
Look, it's about honor.
Yeah. You know if you're going in for a poo, if you're going in for a wee.
It's like the samurai.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when you correct your own homework and the teacher's like, you're only lying to yourselves if you correct something that you know is wrong. It's the same thing.
Exactly. Bethany gets in touch.
Bethany, I've got nothing for Bethany. Bethany better be good, and she will.
There we go.
Something.
She says, "Hello, buttocks, buttocks."
I like that.
Absolutely love the podcast. Thanks for keeping going. I listen to you whilst I hide from my daughter and eat chocolate during the lockdown. Which is good.
Is she hiding from her daughter because she's stolen all the chocolate and the daughter's just looking for it, like a T-Rex? Yes.
She's written it as, I listen to you whilst I hide from my daughter eating chocolate during lockdown. So maybe her daughter eats chocolate in such a horrifying way.
Ah.
That she has to hide from
it. She has to hide from it. Okay, yeah.
Her daughter's chomping jaws. So she says, not sure if you have one, but here's a wedding poo story for your collection.
Oh, great. The happiest poo of your life.
Something old, something poo. something borrowed, something poo again. Being from the Southwest, she says. I'm a big cider drinker, and it's all my internals have been trained on.
Wow, I like that phrasing. I've never heard that before.
It's to train one's internals. However, at our wedding, I had one glass of wine for the photos, and then everyone kept buying me another wine to replace the previous. Yes, a real risk. Skip to 8 hours later, lots of wine, lots of dancing, including my hilarious pretend I have two dicks in my hands move. It's a fun wedding. I like this wedding a lot.
I presume that's the sort of jerking them into your onto your face move, and she's not just like holding them coldly.
Yeah.
With her palms
or she's
upturned.
Not holding them. Yeah, she's not holding them statically and then sort of sensuously kissing each one slowly.
Like dumbbells, just lifting them up like she's working out with them.
No, we're both imagining the same absolutely frantic sideways motion, dick-jerking dance, I think.
Yeah, she's a bukkake bride. She's being the bukkake bride.
Yes, and what a bride. And suddenly it's the end of the night. Our wedding was at a beautiful well-being center with a lovely honeymoon suite that had a bath with a giant round window overlooking the grounds.
Lovely.
My now husband helps me stumble to the suite, where I just sob all night as I feel so awful from the alien wine inside me.
Oh no.
She says,
the wedding night.
Yeah, alien wine.
Alien wine. Alien must wine. Not drink the alien wine.
It's
is made from time.
Bottle. Yeah.
Made
it's
of pure time.
Of Gleep Glorp 86. Chateau Neuf de Glarp.
Very good.
If you ever meet my husband, she says that's his favorite impression to do, even 6 years later. Morning comes, and I try to make myself feel better with a shower and lie on the bed in a dressing gown. It's at this point I risk sneaking a fart.
Oh no.
But my face shows it all. Yes, I shit in the dressing gown. On my wedding morning, in our honeymoon suite, in front of my husband.
Well, that's the something borrowed ruined.
He finds it funny and helps me out. We hose me down and the dressing gown down in the romantic bath. We hose down me and the dressing gown in the romantic bath. There we are. There was a couple of extra downs in there. And we leave a shitty gown for the staff to find, I go and shout about it to my sister in my hungover state. Only now did I think if we just put the dressing gown in a bag in the bin, no one would have known. They'd have thought we'd have nicked it. But no, we left it to be found. All the best, Beth.
Man, that's rough. Well, I mean, again, that's real love, isn't it?
That's a good sign.
That's a good marriage, yeah.
It's interesting that maybe that could become a new tradition, like when you're getting married as a young lady, one of your elderly female relatives, your grandmother or an old great aunt or a wise woman of the village will say, on the morning after thine wedding, thou must shit thyself, the true test of love. It is most good luck, like it'd be like an old wives' tale. You poop yourself in front of your new husband. Ye shall for 20 years married be. Something like that.
Yes. You must wait for true love's piss.
Truest love's sweet piss.
She will only be awoken by true love's piss.
That is definitely a that should that if it's not the line a line in a kind of porn parody it should be.
I've always really admired the use of the word parody in porn parodies. Like, sure, everyone's fucking, but we're gonna make it funny too. It's also a satire on the film industry.
Yeah. We spend a lot of effort finding people who, kind like 30% look like the characters. A lot of money on costumes. Obviously, they all have to be in good shape and the all porn sized. But we've got some pretty funny stuff on the actual show. We've got some pretty good riffs, I think, on Spider-Man. Some pretty good observations we're going to get in there. Tabby gets in touch.
Tabby, get Gabby and tell us what's been happening.
Yes, nice. Bonjour, mon poopy friends.
Bonjour.
Yeah, she clarifies, I'm not French. I'm simply not funny enough to think of anything other than a foreign greeting.
Hey, it's a little bit of class, a little bit of much-needed sophistication to the podcast. Mm.
She says, a long-time listener, I've spent many of my commutes weeping on the bus as I try and hold in my laughter. It is often easier just to pretend to be sad than to explain I'm cry-laughing at poopy stories. I've converted my sister Flora to the church.
Flora! Well, look forward to hearing from Flora.
She is known as the family shitter.
Ah, very much look forward to hearing from Flora. The family shitter. What a position to hold.
Well, we're going to hear from her indirectly, because she says, and so we knew we'd have to send one of her stories in.
Great.
In her teenage years, she was at a sleepover with her friends. Said friend lived in a very large Victorian home. It was easy to get lost. Like a Lemony Snicket film. A big Tim Burton ramble down house.
A large Victorian home.
A large Victorian home, easy to get lost. That evening, a shit was pending.
Pending.
With IBS, Flora cannot procrastinate these things to an easier time. It was happening.
Okay. It's on in the Victorian house.
That's right. The clock has struck poo, essentially. So off she went to find a loo. When she found one, there was no messing around. Trousers down and it was go.
Sounds good.
After finishing her monstrous log, which she then describes as a proper chonker.
Wow.
She came to the realization that there was no water in this toilet.
Huh?
Yes.
Oh no.
She had shat in a preserved antique toilet.
No! Why would you do that? Why would you put that there? Why would you put that there? What? An antique toilet in the bathroom?
An antique loo. Well, presumably she's been lost in this rambling house and gone into the historical diorama wing.
Wow, where they keep, like, the original Thomas Crapper or a toilet or something.
Yeah, the old fixtures.
That is appalling.
Obviously, she panicked. What was she to do?
What was Peter Pooh?
The bin had holes in, and so couldn't be used as a bucket. So I think like a mesh bin.
Yeah.
She resorted to using a Mao Am striped sweetie wrapper from her pocket and ferrying water from the sink to the toilet.
Wait, but this toilet is connected to the plumbing?
Well, she's trying. I don't know.
Right.
She's trying to ferry it from the sink, yeah. It's unclear.
Okay, let's see where this goes. I mean, it doesn't sound
obviously,
like it's going well.
But, like, think about a Mao Am stripe sweetie wrapper. That's, like, what? A less water than you could hold in your mouth.
Yeah, a lot less. Less water than you can hold in your hands, probably.
Yeah. So she's using a little sweet wrapper to dribble water onto her fucking massive turd.
Oh.
Obviously, this did absolutely fuck all. With great shame, she went to find her friend's very scary, very, very tall, and very Canadian father. He walked to the toilet, with my sister following along, like some sort of psychopath from a horror film. Showing no emotion, he simply shut the door and walked away.
Wait, so he followed her in, looked at the poo in the toilet, and then just left.
And then just went, no reaction, and shut the door, and off he went.
Away from the bathroom. Away from the scene of the crime.
Well, not further in.
No. Yeah, okay.
We like to think her turd is still there 5 years on.
I mean, that's on you if you're putting toilets around the place. That the blame, you got to shoulder some of the blame there. Because if you're going to just put a toilet that isn't meant to be used around, what do you expect is going to happen?
It's not the same as someone being mad enough to shit in an IKEA toilet in a display.
No, this is in a house. This is in a home.
This is in a home. You're young. You're in a strange house. You can imagine the thoughts going through that guy's head where he thought, I can't even really be annoyed about this. I'm only now realizing how unwise I've been.
I knew this antique toilet habit was going to be nothing but trouble.
Yeah, well, this is it. I like that he was very Canadian as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you crapped in my toilet, eh?
Well, it's my own fault. But then he was also scary, a scary Canadian.
Yes. She says, this was missed out in the original email, but an added note, Flora blocked the toilets with another massive shit before Phil's Exeter show this year.
Oh! They came to Exeter? Wait. Exeter. Oh, they came to Exeter! What? Not in the venue?
Well, it must have been in the venue.
That's why all the taps backstage exploded.
Yes, well, that's it, yeah.
Yeah. And the dressing room filled with brown water. That'll be why. Yes. That was a good show. That was a fun show, Exeter. Nice big crowd there. Back when we could all sit perilously close to one another. Nary a care in the world.
Perilously close. Yeah. Mm. Charlie sent us some praise redacted as a founding farty.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Let's see.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, Alistair gets in touch.
Alistair, a good palister.
Hi, Momentum and the set of prime numbers. There you go.
Wait, because he says wait.
They're both the letter P.
Momentum and the set of prime numbers.
Hmm.
Oh, in maths. All right, the symbols P.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah, very good. Very advanced stuff from Alistair there.
So advanced it went over my head. And I'm the most advanced being on the planet.
He says, I've only just started listening to your pod, and I'm on episode 14 after 2 days. Fucking hell.
Wow, that is psychotic. That is not good for your brain.
That's not good. No, that's a lot.
That's not healthy, Alistair. That's really not
fucking
healthy.
Hell.
That's 7 hours of us a day.
That's a job.
That's a good night's sleep's worth of us each day.
That's a job with lunch. God.
Wow, 14 episodes. That must be a contender for like highest rate of listening.
Yes, so far. We've had some terrifying rates of listening in before. We'd have to look through the emails to be certain. Some people do seem to get ridiculously far, but over sort of say 2 weeks. But yeah, 14 in 2 days. Good Lord.
That's, I mean, I'd almost understand says, if we were like a gripping box set sort of New York Times, you know, series.
Yeah.
But
page
where you want to find out what happens next, but we definitely aren't.
If we'd released a series of podcasts that we recorded whilst unknowingly one of us was committing a series of murders. And so people are like, you have to listen because like you can sort of hear when the police start to close in, you can hear. As opposed to just, what numbers look like guns. So he says, he started listening to us after hearing our episode of Meet Me at the Muslim, which is an autocorrect for museum.
Ah, what's it autocorrected it to? Meet Me at the Muslim.
Yeah.
As in the fabric?
No, as the religion.
Oh, Meet Me at the Muslim.
Yeah, Meet Me at the Muslim.
Yeah.
Yes, we did Meet Me at the Museum with the Postal Museum.
Yes.
We went around on the little train.
The spiritual predecessor to this podcast.
Yes, technically, yes. Yes. He said, I was aware of your work separately, but didn't know you came together to combine your serene voices. Firstly,
how lucky did he feel? How lucky! It's like when I was a teenager and I was gifted the album At the Summit, which is a collaboration album between Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington. And I thought, these two geniuses together for a whole album. That must have been how Alistair felt when he found our podcast. The two definitive geniuses of their form. Together. Compounding one another's magic. Yeah, what a just red letter day that must have been.
Oh, no wonder he's done this 14 in 2 days.
Yeah, who can blame him?
He would have done more, but he had to keep taking breaks to just his voice hoarse from laughing and cheering and clapping.
One of the greatest albums of music ever made, by the way, At the Summit. Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong, highly recommended if you like
jazz. Is it At the Summit or The Great Summit?
The Great Summit. The Great Summit. At the Summit is like Tenzing Norgay's autobiography. Yeah, no, it's The Great Summit.
It's still very good to listen to musically.
Tenzing Norgay's autobiography.
Yeah, he just sings the whole thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But yeah, The Great Summit, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong. Our pick of the week.
So he says, firstly, he says, I have a weirdest normal thing, which is the excessive amount of ketchup that my contemporaries put on all foods.
The weirdest normal thing. So yeah, so Alistair thinks it's very weird how many people put too much ketchup on them.
Yeah, or just the amount of ketchup. But it is normal to put ketchup on food, but it is a lot.
I've got better and better over the years at knowing exactly how much ketchup I'm going to need. And there's a real sense of satisfaction with that final swipe that finishes off the food and the ketchup in one go.
Yeah.
Threading
that needle.
Leaving my plate full, you know, Jack Spratt's wife, you know.
It's terrible when you're a kid and you just have this fucking river of ketchup and you think, oh, I'm mad. Why did I think I needed that?
And you're not a very saucy boy.
Half the plate is ketchup. Yeah. I am not a saucy boy, although ketchup is a non-Newtonian liquid, so I'm a lot more friendly to it.
So it's close enough to solid that you're open to it, ketchup.
Yeah. Like mayonnaise. Yeah, exactly. It's so nearly a solid under tension.
I mean, mayonnaise is essentially just very scrambled egg.
Yes. Yeah. Someone's gone absolutely fucking apeshit when they were scrambling some eggs, and then they knocked some vinegar in there.
Yeah. Okay, so you wouldn't class those as sauces necessarily.
No, or maybe I'm okay with sauces, but gravies and you know, whatever it is, consommés, bisques.
Right, so the sauces you can't really control. The ones that won't stay put.
Exactly.
The ones that get everywhere.
They're leaking under other foods and wetting the bread, that kind of thing. They're corrupting their fellows.
But don't you love it when you're eating a fry-up and you cut into some sausage and it's all covered with baked bean sauce?
No, Jesus.
Yes, yes, and the slight sweetness cuts through the salty meatiness. It's delish.
Disgusting.
It's delish.
Disgusting. Just the idea of thinking like, well, I wish all my food was equally tainted by a thin liquid. This is horrible. Oh.
How do you feel about cereal?
I don't like cereal.
Yeah, I could have guessed that.
Yeah, it's just the idea of going like, well, we've baked essentially a bunch of tiny sort of biscuits, and now instead of just eating them, you have to get your drink and put it on them, and then make them mush again, and then now eat them, but not too mushy.
And there's also something just strange about consuming milk with a spoon, like it's a soup.
It's objectively, it's fucking mental, and I have no idea how it possibly began.
Yeah, it is a strange idea. It's the only thing it's the only time when you can just pour milk on something.
Yes. Yeah. If you were having a fry up and you just went, well, you know, I pour my cup of tea all over the fry up to get it nice and mushy. That's a lovely bowl of fry up. It's so weird. I've always thought it was fucking mad.
I've gone back into cereal, especially over the summer, because you want it cold. It's quite refreshing when it's hot. Like, you woke up and it's a hot night and you have a bowl. It's easy. It's just a bowl of cereal and it's cool, cold milk. It's quite nice, I say.
But I mean, why do they have to be in a bowl?
Well, because it's quite hard to keep it on a plate.
Yes. But why can't you just eat cereal and just drink the milk?
Well, why don't you can do that with tea?
Yeah.
Well, because of the effect of the marriage.
But it's such a temporary effect that you could just have by like eating the cereal and sipping your milk, right?
I mean, that sounds plain psychotic.
It's a lot less psychotic than going, well, this is taking too long, and pouring your drink onto your breakfast. Which is the behavior of like those Silicon Valley billionaires where they try and make their breakfast as quick as possible so they can get back to the stock market or whatever the fuck.
We're never going to see eye to eye on this.
It gets even more mental where it's like, not only have we just baked these grains and now you have to wet them, but now they're in the shape of fucking leprechaun heads and they're full of marshmallows. Now it's pudding.
Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah. So, starting the day with crunchy pudding that's a strange concept.
Crunchy wet pudding that's in a bowl. Eat it quick before it soaks through the crunchy pudding. And it's crunchy pudding that was invented to stop people jacking it.
Oh, yeah, cornflakes. Well, yeah. To keep people... I don't really see the connection myself. It just kept your right hand busy for a bit, I suppose. But wouldn't all food?
No, I think they thought that like passions were aroused by food with lots of flavors in. So the plainest sort of food would be like a cold shower, keep you calm.
Okay. Okay, imagine hating wanking so much you came up with a new food.
Imagine trying so hard to stop yourself wanking that you invent a dish. It's like, well, how did you invent this incredible new type of? It's a sort of, it's kind of like a pizza, but it's more like a sort of. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, there's no real word for it. How did you do it? And they go, well, I just was so concentrating so hard on not whacking it. I was just fucking around in the kitchen. Desperately trying not to whack it again. So that's Alistair's weird normal thing. Weirdest normal thing is the amount of ketchup people put all over their food.
Sure. I think that's fair. Even as a ketchup user myself, I can see that.
Yeah. And so he says, anywho, the point of my email is that he has an okay thank you story where he didn't say the words, but the sentiment was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it was a few years ago, in my second year of uni, living in a house in Liverpool with six other friends. That's a lot of friends to live with.
That's a lot of friends.
Mm-mm-mm.
Seven friends in Liverpool. Gosh.
Yeah. He said, I was the only one who didn't mind having the room at the front of the house downstairs. So that's where the story unfolds. One night I fell asleep without locking my bedroom door, which is very uncommon. During the night I had a dream where a man was at the end of my bed, which was strange. So when I woke up, I felt quite odd. I rolled over to check the time on my phone, and it was gone. So was my laptop, my bag, my rucksack, all my uni work, everything.
Wow. How about that? Uni work? Why would they want you? Why would they want your notes?
Well, I guess they didn't check the rucksack. It'd be funny if
I saw them there. Okay.
These theories are garbage.
Right, they want folders lying on the side like, hey, this guy's essays are pretty good reading.
It's like a burglar who does a sort of a Beautiful Mind thing and solves all your equations and leaves them behind. So he says, then I realized to my horror, it wasn't a dream. There had been a man at the end of my bed. I had been woken by him robbing me. I had sat up and said hello to him, thinking I was dreaming, and fallen back to sleep with a friendly Jesus. Goodbye to the man.
That's funny. Oh, man. How spooky.
Well, good night. Enjoy. Collapsing back onto the pillows.
That's so spooky, but... I mean, the burglar just went. I wonder if the burglar's used to it. He knows, like, when someone's really awake and when they're still asleep.
Yeah, or if someone says it to the burglar, like, "Hey, does this happen to you in your career as a burglar?" Do they sort of chuckle warmly and go, "Oh yes, plenty of confused sleep talkers. Oh, in my time, I've seen a few. I've had some doozies. They've got all these funny stories."
Man, that's some bold burglary.
Yeah, that's the boldness of a crackhead.
Gosh, you think?
Yeah, because they're just so on target, so inured to consequences that they just freeze while you go, "Hello, oh, good night," and go to sleep, and they think, "Okay."
Man.
So he says, as you can imagine, this revelation was, to put it mildly, fucking terrifying. But the story gets better. A week later, when I'd plucked up the courage to leave the house, I was on my way to watch the varsity rugby league match. Due to my ordeal, I was not playing. When suddenly, I spotted a man cycling down the street on a bike very similar to my own.
Aha!
As he passed, I realized it was my own, so I started to chase him down the street, umbrella flapping behind me. I caught up with him and quite bluntly stated, "That's my bicycle." To which he replied, "Oh, okay, here you go," and tried to give it back to me. I didn't take it because I wasn't sure if I was allowed to, and given the police had got involved, it counted as an aggravated burglary because I'd interacted with the man, I rang the police. I did get my bike back, thankfully, and the man had bought it a few days before from a shop, not realizing it was stolen. So in conclusion, although I didn't say okay, thank you, I think the fact that I fell back to sleep mid-robbery very much has the same energy.
Very casual stuff from this new owner of the bike, if he bought it. And he just went,
I guess he...
Oh, okay. It's your bike.
Yeah. I guess he wasn't surprised because that was the level of rat-like shiftiness of the man he'd bought it from. Where he must have thought, well, someone's going to tell me that I've nicked their bike because I'm paying 30 quid for this clearly good bike.
Yeah.
From a man with like a thin spivs moustache who keeps rubbing his hands together. You like bikes, do you? That kind of thing. He keeps saying that kind of thing.
Opens up his trench coat and just bikes hanging from it.
Just full of bikes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So maybe he was expecting it. He knew he was on a moody bike.
Yeah, that's spooky though. That's spooky when you get burgled like that.
Terrifying. There's nothing more terrifying than that violation of your most secure space like that.
Once my folks came over to visit and they were in the flat, and me and my sister were out and they were just hanging out in the living room, and then they heard the front door just open, and they went, "Phil?" And there was no answer, and then, "Phil?" And they got up and they went to the door was open, and they looked down the stairs of the apartment block, and there was just a guy in a red jacket just shuffling down the stairs. Ugh. But it's only because they happened to be in that he didn't get away with it.
Yeah, he must have thought there was no one there.
Ah, yeah, he must have been watching.
Did he pick the lock?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's a, I don't know what you call those locks, the latch things. You can kind of open them because of the groove on the latch. I don't know what you call the actual thing that slides into place. But yeah. If you get a sort of piece of plastic that is floppy enough but hard enough, you can kind of slide it under and it pushes it, you know,
Make it so rigid, but, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we lock the door properly now, but...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, apparently if you actually, you know, talk to someone who can pick locks, or you see those lock-picking videos on YouTube, it's just like most locks these guys can just get through in like 2 minutes. It's terrifying. And it's like most doors are just like a bog standard Yale lock, which is apparently like, to someone who knows what they're doing, just no defense at all.
Yeah, that's true.
It's nuts. It's nuts, man. Terrifying.
Crazy, I tell you.
Maybe I should get a better lock.
I had seen the guy before. It took me a while to put the two together. I was walking up the stairs to our flat, and there was just a guy there in a red jacket. He just sort of looked cheekily at me, and then just started going down the stairs. And he didn't live in the flat next to us, so he had no reason being up there. And we're on the top floor.
And
he just sort of cheekily smiled at me, and then just walked down the stairs. And later I realized it was the same guy, case in the joint.
Have you seen him before? Since, I mean.
Nah, not seen him since. I'm guessing he's avoiding the area now.
What does he look like?
He had a red, like, bomber jacket. His face... It's kind of like the lead singer of Keen.
Ooh. On Hard Times.
On Hard Times. Might have been him, actually.
Yeah.
Quite baby face, I guess, would be the word for him. A baby face burglar.
Interesting.
The cutest burglar in London.
Baby face burglar.
It's the baby face burglar. A city under siege.
Don't be fooled by his innocent looks. The chubby cheeks of this kingpin of crime. What would be more terrifying than an actual grown man with an actual baby's face? Just a horrible tiny head.
Yeah, that would be quite haunting.
You'd scare the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be cute.
I think eventually you'd try to find him quite cute, wouldn't you? Eventually. Like, once you sort of force yourself to look at him a bit longer, you'd go, nah.
No, because he's talking with like an adult baritone
deep voice.
Yeah. Hey, give me your stuff.
Yeah, that's gross. That is gross.
You'd shit yourself. Fair. That's disgusting. I've made myself disgusted. I'll see you, Phil, at the cricket ground.
Oh yeah,
we're going to be cricket boys from now on.
Yes, we're now cricket. We're now full time cricket players, and this is going to be the Bud Pod Cricket Podcast.
There is talk.
That's okay with everyone.
Yeah, there is talk of what was called the Four Candles 11 playing again. I'd be very up for that.
Yeah, I need to learn how to bowl so I don't humiliate myself again. I put so much practice into the bowling and I actually got it down, and then the day I came to it. This is the thing, I'm good under pressure of an audience except for sport.
Yeah.
The second people are watching me do sport, my body just falls apart like Mr. Potato Head. Like, my arms just fall off, my nose comes out of its hole, like I just crumble to the ground. It's pathetic.
Yeah, going up to bowl, I was more nervous than when I have performed in front of maybe 2,500 people.
Yeah, easily.
Way more. So much pressure to not throw the ball in a way that you almost worry that like a guy who looks like a tough coach from an American high school film will pop up out of the bushes and go, "You throw like a girl," and start like spitting at you.
Yeah.
Even if that guy wasn't there before, you'll wish him into being by your weak throw.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm well up for it. I'm well up for it. I'm a cricket guy now, as we all said. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you all have a good week and a fun time.
See you on the green. What is it? The cricket ground?
The oval, the round. The field. See you in the field.
At Lord's.
Yes. Okay. Isn't
see
that
you
where
at Lord's?
Is that where people go for the miracles in France?
Yeah, because we need that for cricket skills.
That's right. That's
we're
right.
Going to dip ourselves in the water and hope that we come out as a spin bowler of note.
Yeah. Thanks for all your letters, everybody. Keep jacking it. Talk
go
to
you guys.
Soon. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.